Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Reading this morning, Canto 3, Chapter 9, Text 2, Brahma's Prayers for Creative Energy. Rupam yaditad avibodha rasodayena
Rupam yaditad avibodha rasodayena
Shashvan nivritta tamasaksara nugrahaya
Shashvan nivritta tamasaksara nugrahaya
Adau grahitam avatara shataika bijam
Adau grahitam avatara shataika bijam
Nyanna vipadma bhavanat aham avirasam
Nyanna vipadma bhavanat aham avirasam
Rupam
Rupam
Form
Form
Yat
Which
Etat
Etat
That
That
Avabhodarasa
Avabhodarasa
Of your internal potency.
Udhayena.
With the manifestation.
Shashvat.
Forever.
Nivritta.
Freed from.
Tamasaha.
Material contamination.
Sad
anugrahaya.
For the sake of the devotees.
Adau.
Original in the creative energy of matter.
Grahitam.
Accepted.
Avatara.
Of incarnations.
Shata ekabijam.
The root cause of hundreds.
Yat,
that which.
Nabhi padma.
Padma.
The navel lotus flower.
Bhavanat.
From the home.
Aham.
Myself.
Avirasam.
Generated. Translation. The form which I see, this is Brahma speaking, addressing Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. The form which I see is eternally freed from material contamination and has advented to show mercy to the devotees as a manifestation of the internal potency. This incarnation is the origin of many other incarnations, and I am born from the lotus flower grown from your navel home. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The three deities, Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshwara, or Lord Shiva, the executive heads of the three modes of material nature, passion, goodness, and ignorance, are all generated from Garbhadakshayi Vishnu, who is described herein as described herein by Brahma. From the Kshiradakshayi Vishnu, many Vishnu incarnations expand at different ages in the duration of the cosmic manifestation. They are expanded only for the transcendental happiness of the pure devotees. The incarnations of Vishnu, who appear at different ages and times, are never to be compared to the conditioned souls. The Vishnu tattvas are not to be compared to deities like Brahma or Shiva, nor are they on the same level. Anyone who compares them is called a Pashandi or infidel. Interesting. He's used the... Anyway. Prabhupada sometimes says that the language of someone who does not follow a particular religion, Christians say heathen, Muslims say infidel, and the Vedas say asura or something. He's using infidel. Anyone who compares them is an offender. Pashandi, or infidel. Tamasa, mentioned herein, is the material nature. And the spiritual nature has a completely separate existence from tama. Therefore, spiritual nature is called avabodha rasa, or avarodha rasa. Avarodha means that which completely nullifies. In the transcendence, there is no chance of material contact by any means. Brahma is the first living being, and therefore he mentions his birth from the lotus flower generated from the abdomen of Garbhodakshayi Vishnu. End of purport. Well, there's a lot of information here, and important understandings. We're followers of the Brahma Sampradaya, so whatever Brahma says, just because he says it, it's important. And he doesn't say things that are not important. There are several, four or five important things that he's saying. One is that the Lord's form is forever free from material contamination. That's this Shashvan Nivritta Tamasa. He's forever free. Shashvan, forever. Nivritta Tamasa, free from material contamination. That's the Lord's form. Another is that he descends by his internal potency. That's the Avabodha Rasa. Avabodha Rasa. That which it completely nullifies. So the material contamination is forever absent. He appears by his internal potency, is how Prabhupada has expressed it. But internal potency is forever free from contamination. And the reason for his appearance is Shad Anugrahaya. Shad Anugraha. He wants to give pleasure to his devotees. So Prabhupada has written. They are expanded only for transcendental happiness of the pure devotees. He's making the statement also that this Garbhodakshayi Vishnu is the source of Shata Eka Bijam, hundreds of others. And it is from this form, Garbhodakshayi Vishnu, the Nabhi Padma, the navel home, the lotus flower has sprouted from his navel, and in that way I have been generated. So in the purport, Prabhupada is starting with the guna avatars, Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshwar. The Vishnu in the Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshwar is the Shiradakshay Vishnu. Because it's Shiradakshay Vishnu that is preserving and maintaining the universe, Maya Dakshina Prakriti, as the super soul within the heart of every living being and within every atom, he is the maintainer. So the statement is being made that Garbhadakshay Vishnu, who Lord Brahma is seeing, Garbhadakshay Vishnu is the source of Brahma, Vishnu, and Lord Shiva. He's the source of Lord Brahma, who is the source of Lord Shiva, but he's the source of all three. Garbhadakshay Vishnu. And because Brahma, because Lord Shiva appears as the son of Lord Brahma, he appears as the son of Lord Brahma when the four Kumaras, who appear from the body of Lord Brahma, decline Brahma's request to assist him in expanding praja. They want to remain brahmachari. So he becomes disturbed that they're not prepared to assist him, and in that anger mood the Lord Shiva appears from his forehead, his brow. And it's not to say that Lord Brahma is the source of Lord Shiva, because Lord Shiva is a tattva of the personality of Godhead. So anyway, so something that Prabhupada wants us to understand in the purport is that Lord Vishnu is unique, categorically. He's in his own tattva. There are others of the same tattva, but they're not Brahma or Shiva, nor are they any other powerful demigod, nor are they any living entity. They're in their own tattva, Vishnu tattva. And that Vishnu tattva has these characteristics. They're forever free from material contamination. In contrast, living entities, including Brahma himself, may be in contact with the modes of nature, but Lord Vishnu is forever not in contact. That's this Shashvan Nivritta Tamasa. Forever not in contact with material nature. And then another is when he appears or sends incarnations of himself, they do so by the internal potency. It's not by force of the modes of nature or karma. He's forever free from those things. And so he appears by his internal potency. And what's his reason for doing so? The devotees. Pritranaya sadhunam. To give association to his devotees. Uplift them. And to annihilate the miscreants. Failing to have that fundamental understanding is an offense. So Krishna says similarly in Bhagavad Gita, avajananti mam mudha manushim tanam ashritam. Ashritam means assumed. They think that I've assumed this human-like form. Well, Krishna hasn't assumed a human-like form. Krishna eternally has his form. And like the biblical teaching, man is created in the image of God, not the other way around. God is created in the image of man. That's called anthropomorphism. We just imagine God to be like us. But so the anthropomorphic concept is being addressed. One should not think of the form of Vishnu or Krishna to be created in a human-like way. There's no creation of something that's eternal. But when that form manifests, it's not taking birth like a living entity takes birth. Mother, father, combination, a body is developed over some gestation period and then, boom, Krishna makes his appearance. Or Vishnu makes his appearance. Leelas may be there, but one should not mistakenly understand he's assumed a human-like form. Again, one who thinks that way is an offender or an infidel. I wonder what that word is in Arabic. During all that terrorist stuff, that's one of their favorite words. The Americans are infidels, or the Westerners are infidels. And then somebody that, like, you know, shares some of their views, they're also infidels. Like, you know, just pretty much anybody that isn't like I am is an infidel. And so that means subject to being eliminated. Sure. Anyway, that's their take. Here there's responsibility for having such a misconception. And the responsibility is that one remains bound in material existence. But he who was Shashvan Nivritta Tamasa, if one has a correct understanding of Lord Vishnu's position, then one also becomes Nivritta Tamasa, free from material existence. Just by that proper understanding, or Janma Karma Chame Divyam Evam Yoviti Tatvataha Chaktva Deham Purnarjana Naiti Maviti Surjana. Prabhupada writes, in the transcendence with a capital T, there is no chance of material contact by any means. How does Vishnu do it? If he's the source of these three entities that are in charge of the modes of nature, and ultimately he's the source of everything, how does he remain free from material contact? Sounds like material contact. But he does so through the agency of his energies. The classic is his glancing over Pradhan, and by simply glancing, the living entities are injected within Pradhan. So it's not direct. It's the same discussion is there in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna describes, I create generations of men and demigods, and with them sacrifices by which they can become situated in transcendence. And after describing all the things that he does, he says, yet I do nothing. I'm situated as neutral. Because all those things are taking place by his energies, and it's his energies, so he's not contaminated by his energies. He's remaining forever in transcendence, with no contact, no chance of contact with matter. And according to the disposition of the living entities, they may serve the Lord favorably. Of course, they may serve the Lord unfavorably also. But by serving the Lord favorably, then the will of the Lord is done. And so there's his internal potency and his external potency and his marginal potency, and the living entity being marginal can serve the internal potency or in the agency of the internal potency or external potency. And Lord Brahma here is praying for the creative energy so that he can stay within that internal potency and perform the work that's assigned to him, the creating of the universe. The only thing I can think to add is Prabhupada is using these two terms of a bodha rasa and of a rodha rasa, almost as if they're interchangeable, and I don't know the difference. He just says, therefore spiritual nature is called of a bodha rasa or of a rodha rasa. Of a rodha means that which completely nullifies. In transcendence, there's no chance of material contact by any means. And the word for word, as well as the translation, that he's presented it as by the agency of his internal potency. So that's how Krishna does things directly. He does things directly through his internal potency where there's no material contact. And if something is to be done otherwise, it's through his external potency or living entities who are serving him, like Lord Brahma is serving him, and he's doing the creating. But Lord Vishnu does not directly come in contact with the material contamination, tamasa. Tamasa means ignorance, and matter is ignorance. There's the mode, tamagun, and as long as there's contact with matter, like the living entity, for example, by the agency of false ego identifying with matter, although we're not matter, we're automatically influenced by ignorance. Even if one is in goodness, they're influenced by ignorance, by that identification with matter. And transcendence is no longer identification with matter, just identification with who one is, and then there's facility or opportunity for service in different ways. So that's what Brahma is praying or saying here. He wants that opportunity to serve the Lord, fully conscious of him, and by remaining fully conscious of him while serving him, he's not in contact with the modes of nature either, or he's protected from that influence. That's the essence of the whole chapter. Okay, so any questions? Rupa?
Maharaj, I understand that Lord Brahma is representing mode of passion. We just heard that Maheshwara takes birth through him because of his anger. And I'm wondering, since this anger must be in the service of the Lord and therefore Lila, is that why he's protected from any contamination of this vibration?
Well, first of all, he's not... Lord Brahma is in charge of, as opposed to infected by, the load of passion. It's important for us to make that distinction, especially because we're in his sampradaya. How could we be following one who's infected by, instead of in charge of, the mode of passion? So it's an important distinction. And you know, I guess what your question is, is it this anger simply a lila or by the influence of the internal potency, so that, you know, the whole show can go on. He can do his service for Krishna. That's your question?
Right, that's not, it's not coming from being contaminated.
He has a service. So the short answer is yes. He has a service. It's not exactly Leela, because Leela is particularly appropriate for Krishna. Krishna has Leela. And the living entity has service. So in his service, his assignment or his service is not only to create the universe, but the varieties within the universe. And his very capable four sons, he's wishing that they would assist him, and they're declining. So, you know, it's his service is being checked. So he has some feeling in relation to his service being checked. And that feeling manifests itself. This is Brahma's position, that he just simply thinks something or feels something and forms manifest. So there's disappointment. He has a big service. Here's his four sons. Please help me. No. So he feels something, and that manifests. So it's in relation to his service, that feeling is in relation to his service. And the creative energy that he is imbued with is an energy directly imparted by the Supreme Lord, in addition to being in the category of Guna Avatar. Lord Brahma is also in the category of Shakti Vesha Avatar. And that Shakti is the Lord's Srishti Shakti, his creative potency. So he's invested with the very same potency as the personality of Godhead to create. And one of the ways of bringing about that creation is four Kumaras are requested, they decline, and therefore he creates. He has a feeling and creates Lord Shiva. Not creates in a sense of, you know, from nothing, but he manifests as the rest of his creation is not from nothing, but he manifests as an empowered agent of the personality of Godhead. What I'm getting at here is our anger and Brahma's anger are not to be compared, in short. You know, I want to cook the sabji, and so hasn't cleaned the pot that he was supposed to clean, so I have some, you know, I get angry. Well, but Brahma got angry, and he was transcendental. So it's not the same. Well, why not? You know, my service was cooking the sabji, and his service was creating the universe. What's the difference? It's not just scale, it's the quality of Lord Brahma is different quality. His is exclusively not fruitive. His is, I have some service to do, which is different than, I mean, the purity of one who understands there's some service to be done, and there's not a tinge of the mode of nature, but feelings that person feels, and one who is attached to the modes of nature and is fruitive and wants to achieve something or accomplish something or do something or get something done, and there's an obstacle, that's the mode of passion. The former one is, it's a transcendental emotion. that's inspired by the Lord for the purpose, in Brahma's case, for the purpose of creation. He has to have all this variety to make creation. And part of creation is the agent of destruction. That's a long answer. The short answer is yes. Different. Anything else? Yes.
Just to turn this topic a little more clear. You've taught us that when we face an obstacle, it's really the inside. And so the Vaishnava looks inside to say, what's inside of me that may be causing this external circumstance to be an obstacle in my service? And I'm trying to contrast that with the case of Bhagavan.
I discussed it. You can do it again if you want. Want me to do it again?
I didn't capture it. I tried to.
Go to Krishna's pastimes. So many. Nanda Maharaj is being swallowed by a serpent. And the coward boyfriends of Krishna see his body getting slowly being swallowed by this huge serpent. So they want to protect Nanda Maharaj. So they, you know, get sticks and start beating. They get burning sticks and start, you know, burning. And, you know, nothing they do is working. So they call out for Krishna because he's their only shelter. And Krishna comes and places his foot on the serpent's head, and immediately the cursed entity that had that body of the serpent is relieved of his reactions and comes out in a Gandharva form and pays his obeisances to Krishna, and he's gone. So the mood of the cowherd boys is not fruitive, because it's not fruitive because of their attachment to Krishna. That's where this language, Shashvan Nivritta Tamasa. There's no contact, as with, because they're attached to one who has no contact with material nature, they have no contact with material nature. But here's a difficulty, here's an obstacle. Big difficulty, Nanda Maharaj is, so, where Krishna is in the grip of the Kaliya serpent. They can't do anything. Because to go to do anything, they'll instantly they're dead, because the Kaliya lake is so poisonous. Or, you know, so many examples. Radharani wishes to meet with Krishna, and there's an obstacle. Jatila and Katila. But it's not out of attachment through the modes of nature, it's transcendental attachment. That's worlds apart from where we are, where we're doing some service, but we're also very much bound by the modes of nature. And what gets, we can say any feeling that we may have of some, in addressing some obstacle, it's a mix. There's some desire to serve Krishna, but there's also some fruitive implication, and that's being triggered by the obstacle. And, you know, we want, and it's not coming. and that covers or colors our mood of devotion. And so we can't and we don't experience transcendental emotions. And thus we become simply attached to Krishna. And one of the best means for us to become simply attached to Krishna is the non-fruitive activity of chanting the holy name. What fruitive thing is there that comes from chanting the holy? Well, if I feel good, okay. But it's not, you know, what are you doing? People will look at chanting and say, you're wasting your time. You can be earning money or doing something besides wasting time. There's nothing fruitive about it. No sense gratification. It's, what are you doing? What's wrong with you? Brainwashed. Yes?
The incarnations like Krishna, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, everybody is there, like incarnation. So their bodies of spiritual body, which is not contaminated with material. So when they at the end of their incarnations, so they disappear with their bodies just because of that reason, since their bodies of spiritual body, so at the end of their incarnations.
The punchline kind of went real fast. You want to know when they perform their pastime of disappearance, what happens to that body that they appeared in?
Yes.
Well, the body that they appear in is themselves. So when they disappear, the body disappears. Like let's take, for example, Dhruva. He was meditating. He saw the form of Vishnu. The form of Vishnu disappeared. He opened his eyes and the form of Vishnu was before him. And there was Garuda. And Garuda wasn't, you know, but the form of Vishnu was before him, along with Garuda. And then they had their exchange and he left. Ramchandra returned to Ayodhya. There's pastimes by which they leave this realm. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu entered into the Gopinath deity. So what happens to that spiritual form? It entered into the Gopinath deity. But it's not, you know, it's not a worldly thing.
So those ones, like the Rupa
That's eternal.
So, there is a pastime, like, I'm not clear, it's like Sanatana Goswami, I think, like, by passing through the Japan forests, he drank water, so he got the skin disease from his body. So, it's like, my question is like, that they have a spiritual body or a spiritual body, I'm not really understanding that.
Two things. Don't speculate. It's very detrimental. Prabhupada specifically said in relation to the body of the spiritual master or pure devotee, very dangerous territory. Beware of that territory. That's one point. And second point is, in principle, how to view the body of Rupa Goswami, you know, the body that he manifested as Rupa Goswami or Sanatana Goswami, etc. Prabhupada's expression is like comparison between a gold box and a gold-plated box. A gold-plated box is not a gold box. But it acts like a gold box. It looks like a gold box. So or electricity, an electrified copper wire. A copper wire is just copper wire, but when electricity is running, it acts like electricity. So the body of a pure devotee, of such a pure devotee, can act like that. Although it's not the same as electricity, it's a copper wire. Or it's not the same as a gold box, it's a gold-plated box. He didn't, you know, get into further than that, so I'm not going to go into further than that. It acts spiritually. That's the important thing to understand. And so Rupa Manjari is a spiritual form, and Rupa Goswami is the spiritualized form, the gold-plated box. Which question?
Chanting.
A chanting question. Okay.
How clear the pronunciation should be for chanting to be considered? For example.
How clear the pronunciation should be so that chanting is considered what?
Valid.
Valid?
For example, can we say, can we pronounce Rama as Rama?
Why are you asking that question? So then chant so that you're hearing, so that you're pronouncing and hearing each syllable. That's simple. You don't need to go, you know, which is valid. Just chant properly. You know that you're not. Slow down or whatever it is that you have to do so you're chanting properly. There's spiritual benefit even in the other. Mispronunciation, even, you know, juxtaposition of different syllables, still spiritual benefit is there. So receive full spiritual benefit by speaking all the syllables. Yes?
Right. This concept of being in the internal potency but interacting with material elements and...
Wait. Being within the internal potency but acting within the material elements.
Interacting. Material elements and...
Like Lord Brahma did.
Yes, and affecting or affecting configurations of matter seems very enigmatic to me.
Seems very what?
Enigmatic. It's an unfathomable concept. You know, I'm thinking of like going to work and trying to be in the internal potency, but there's all this material stimulus, and then you produce results that, you know, like, you know, deadlines and projects that are material outcomes. Yet a pure devotee would be totally in the internal potency while doing all that. It just, I don't know where to start. I feel stuck and not making headway with that.
I've got one solution. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, couple things. Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that because the duty of a grihastha includes mixing with ordinary people, although the injunction is one shouldn't mix with ordinary people, because it's in the line of a service, it you can say it doesn't count or it doesn't contaminate, one doesn't become implicated, provided one is doing that particular activity as a duty of a grihastha or a daivi varnashram duty. One doesn't become contaminated by the modes of nature when so doing. And even he specifically says, in conversation, because prajalpa is one of the things that destroys bhakti. Then he gets very specific, and he says if one speaks conventional conversation with persons as a matter of cordiality, that's not prajalpa, it's not destroying your devotional service. It's part of your social obligation as a grihastha, one who acts that way. So, yes, it's true that projects and deadlines, and what does the project product have to do with the internal potency of Krishna? If in such a workplace there is a devotee who is conscious of Krishna, in course of time, the consciousness of the others in the workplace can be influenced by the consciousness of the devotee. And thus, you know, the desire of what we as a company or group or business will do takes a different shape by the influence over time, the influence of that devotee. And that's the major part of remaining within the internal potency. If one was a Shuddha Bhakta, then that process might transpire more quickly. Or at least, you know, we can say in a positive sense, infect the persons in the workplace. And that's a service. That's the internal potency service. And the product, you know, the production and the deadline and the particular form of what is going on, there's not attachment from the side of the devotee. From the side of the boss, there's attachment, but from the side of the devotee who's in that work situation, they're not attached to become the enjoyer of, now our company has produced this and so we're going to get more contracts and whatever else is in the mindset of the fruitive workers. The devotee is, the service is, as an agent of Krishna in this work situation, I can help to influence by my quality, by my character, by my speech, by my devotion, I can influence the hearts and the minds of others gradually, incrementally. And in course of time, that bears its fruit. And, you know, broad scale, we have many such devotees doing like that in their occupations. It changes the consciousness of the world that in which we live. And what can I do? I'm a grihastha, I need some occupation. Anything else? Yes.
We should have sincere desire to reach what is real.
We should have sincere desire to
reach what is real.
Reach what is real.
Okay. Let's
start with the assumption, reasonable assumption, that I said it earlier today, but you know, our situation is one of a mix. There's something, and there's a mix. The mix is our conditioning that says, you know, we want so many things. But within that mix, there's a desire to connect with Krishna, to connect with what's real. If that desire was not there, we wouldn't be bothering. we'd be pursuing exclusively whatever those other mixed desires are. But there is something that's genuine. And the fruit of sadhana, bhakti, is that desire becomes, the spiritual desire becomes stronger. And that's what you're repeating. That, you know, our effort and our intention should be, Krishna, please help me. I'd like this desire to become stronger. And as that desire becomes stronger, the other desires over time will diminish. Not like, you know, necessarily instant relief, but over time. So, and that's our hope, because the internal potency is stronger than the external potency. So we situate ourselves in the internal potency. Situate yourself in light and darkness is gone. Because darkness is nothing but the absence of light. So those other desires that mix is due to the weakness of spiritual aspiration, spiritual contact. So make efforts to bring that spiritual contact more strong. The other will then diminish as light dispels darkness. In your question, you were emphasizing the word sincere. There's no sincere desire, but that's not so. A spiritual desire is a sincere desire, even if it's mixed. The mix is not who we are. The mix is, you know, illusion. It's not who we are. We've bought into the illusion, so we've got, you know, lots of stuff to play with. Illusion stuff. But it's not who we are. But who we are is this other. Prabhupada sometimes described that self-realization is gradual, like the rising of the sun is gradual. And it happens every day, so we get to experience it every day, again and again. But self-realization isn't something that happens again and again, but it's like something that happens again and again every day. It happens gradually. From total darkness, you know, then the stages. Little light is coming because the sun is starting to rise. Twilight. And then it's, you know, like early morning. It's light, but you can't actually see the sun yet. And then you can see the sun. And then it's midday sun, very strong. Gradual. Be patient. That thing that is awakening, that whatever it is, that spiritual attraction, that's genuine. That's who we really are. Be patient and continue with devotional practice, and that will continue to grow with guidance and careful attention, Krishna's mercy. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada,
Srila Prabhupada, Swami Maharaj.